Welcome to Vinny Mike, episode 32. How are you doing, Mike?
This is like deja vu, Vinny, 2 days in a row seeing you.
Yeah, I'm tired of it already, but that's okay. So we have a great show tonight. We're live as always on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, out in KKFI in Kansas City, and then of course VinandMikePodcast.com. Before we bring on our great guest, let's just do our quick little introduction. Vin and Mike is now brought to you by Viggy Betts. Check out Viggy Betts on Twitter and Instagram at Viggy Betts. If you DM Viggy Betts now that you're a fan of Vin and Mike, you receive a 14-day free trial with a new VIP membership. So tonight's a really good episode, Mike, something we've been looking forward to for a while. We scheduled this way in advance from tonight, and Kevin Bryant, who is the author of Spies on the Sidelines, The High Stakes World of NFL Espionage, is joining us today. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, great, Ben. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, we're excited to bring you on. So like I was telling you, Kevin, before we started, you know, Mike is digging deep into the book. You know, I've dug deep into the Cliff Notes, but we have, you know, we're really excited to talk about this topic because I think there's a lot of this stuff that fans are always wondering about in the NFL, you know, the spying aspect of things. And I think it was brought to the forefront during Spygate and Deflategate and all that stuff. So it's real exciting. But I think before we start, Kevin, if you could just give our audience a little bit of your background and how you came about making this book.
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, I've spent 23 years working for the Department of Defense, 8 years in the Army, and then the rest of the time as an Army civilian. I've got 13 years as a special agent. And all this time working for the Department of Defense, I have been either, you know, involved in collecting or protecting information for them, for our country. And, you know, after Spygate and Spygate 2, when Josh McDaniels, the you know, who was the Patriots offensive coordinator at the time, he slid over, became the head coach of the Broncos, and they got in trouble for recording another team's practice. And being a Broncos fan, I shouldn't say that too loud on a, you know, Packers podcast, but nonetheless, you know, I got very interested at that point in just how much spying goes on in the NFL. And I think, you know, like you said, you know, Spygate kind of brought it all up, but I wanted to answer that question. First off for myself. And then as I got researching it, I thought, man, this would make a great topic for a book. And I was working on a master's in sports management, working on a master's in intelligence studies. And with my background, I thought, man, I'm really like, this is a book that suits me and my background and all my degrees. And I was like, this is it. This is what I want to write about because I've been looking to write for a long time. And so 8 years later, here I am.
Yeah. What was incredible to me in your book was when we talk about the whole spying, that your book went back to pretty much the beginning of the NFL. And I just laugh because we always talk about technology and some people will say, no, it's great to have better technology. Things are quicker. You learn quicker, so on and so forth. But what people were doing so sneakily back like in the 50s and 60s, you had mentioned, you know, people dressing up as clergy, you know, someone like a dwarf who someone carried into the stadium. It was just crazy hearing those kinds of stories. I really got a laugh about it and just how the years went on, you know, going into the 2020 draft, which was virtual, and how Jim Harbaugh was just so nervous about things going through and people catching signals, just how everything has changed so much in the last 50 years. But in a way, everything stayed the same because teams always want that winning edge. And that's what I really appreciated about this book, that it really depicts that really thing, as much as things change, things have really stayed the same.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, that's true just with espionage in general, the world over. You know, it's jokingly referred to as the world's second oldest profession. And, you know, it's been around for a long time. And a lot of things, you know, they're the same now. as they were before. I mean, you know, if you date back to the history of football, going back to the 1880s with college football, you know, a lot of the same techniques that were done back then are still being done today. You know, you talk about spying on another team's practices. Let's face it, you know, that's, you know, sneaking a guy in there to watch. That's the same. But at the same time, you know, a lot evolves too. So you look at technology today, you know, if you want to talk spying on a practices, now the fear is about drones. You know, it used to be flying a plane or a helicopter overhead. That could be done. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, that dates all the way back to the, you know, George Halas and versus Vince Lombardi, that paranoia with planes flying overhead. You know, it's nothing new, but, you know, now it's drones and, you know, the Patriots versus Falcons Super Bowl. That became a sensitive topic of were the Patriots spying on them. And, you know, it ended up just being some kid flying a drone over, probably trying to check out a practice. But yeah, the techniques are always evolving, always changing to a degree, and some things are, you know, relatively remaining the same.
Yeah.
You know, with your background in intelligence and all that, was there anything as you were researching this book that shocked you when it came to a espionage kind of tactic that an NFL team or someone used during your writing of this book?
Well, I won't say anything shocked me per se. It was a lot as I suspected, that everything you think of that goes on in the crazy world of international espionage is more or less taken place or has taken place at some point in the NFL. But having said that, I would say the thing that shocks me the most is probably just, you know, the breadth of techniques that teams utilize to gain an advantage. I mean, you've got everything. You've got fears of, you know, spying on practices, debriefing players as they move teams, listening devices, you know, using the media to collect information on your opponents, lip reading. And the list just goes on and on and on of all these various techniques that teams use. So that was very interesting. One of the things I was most surprised to find in the writing of this book was that few teams employ personnel that are professionally trained to gather and collect information. There are a lot of former FBI agents that are involved in being the security element for a team and that have that type of background, but very few teams have that offensive professional capability, which surprised me to a degree, but it made for some really funny stories because at times you've got a bunch of people that aren't trained to do this stuff, doing it. And sometimes it leads to some, you know, great stories because they're done by amateurs. And sometimes they're really good at it because they think outside of the box. And sometimes it's, you know, it's more like Austin Powers than James Bond because they don't have the training or the background to, you know, to pull it off.
I was going to ask you, I found it interesting in the book that the practices, right? And at some point they were talking about practices to the public. And I just went to, and I know you said by accident, Packers podcast. We're having the Packers podcast come. I'm Jets and Vinny is Raiders. But I was at a Jets practice recently, and I was just thinking to myself because I read your book, and I'm in there. I'm like, you know, what's stopping me from really taking my phone? And we were close. We were at the 50-yard line and record. I mean, now with cell phones, it seems so easy. And then what I really appreciated was that some coaches would purposely at these practices do different plays that didn't even make sense to really get the public eye out of there. So it was just, you know, it was on my mind to say, wow, you know, what fans do know, who's really there that's a fan, who's not a fan. You can't really control it. So as an organization, you really have to say as a coach and upper management, you have to change your plays around. You can't be consistent because you're going to have people there. You can't control the public. It's just too hard, especially nowadays.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to deal with that. So what a lot of teams will do is limit, you know, I think there's obviously a portion of preseason that's open to the fans, and that's very hard to deal with. So according to league rules and bylaws, other teams are not allowed to have scouts at any of those practices unless that is that practice unless fans are forced to pay to attend the practices, if it's a paid practice, right? So that's the reason all these practices are free. And as a matter of fact, you know, one team, you know, one owner previously, Daniel Snyder for the Redskins, had decided, you know what, I'm going to charge fans to come in here and watch these preseason, you know, practices. And as a result, you had scouts from around the NFL come and show up. And so, you know, the Redskins at the time quickly adapted that and changed that. But it's still, you know, teams are still, you know, potentially, you know, sneaking guys, scouts. And as a matter of fact, in my book, I've got some examples of where people have either been suspected of other teams having, or there have been confirmed cases where, you know, a player has been, you know, one player was told specifically like, hey, yeah, when we played against you, like we had a guy there, and that's, we learned all your, you know, we learned the quarterback's snap count from it, and really, you know, terrorized this quarterback as a result of this. So, yeah, absolutely, it's a big fear.
Yeah.
Do you see? You know, I know you wrote a whole chapter about the draft and free agency and all that. You know, doing your research, did you see teams intentionally sign players from maybe another team with, you know, no reason for them to maybe even have them on the team other than getting information? Did you see any of that during your research?
That goes on week in and week out of the NFL. And I've spoken to coaches that have confirmed that. Yes, that's a big deal, especially when you talk about the practice squad, right? Because there you're not actually having to burn a active roster spot. So if, you know, if the Jets are about to play the Falcons, for example, you know, the Jets could look on the Falcons practice squad and say, who do we want to pick up? Mm-hmm. You know, and then grab that player, bring him on over just for the point of being able to do that, you know, transfer him from the practice squad onto their active roster to be able to do that debrief, or pick up a guy that's been cut. And that way you don't even, if it's a guy who's cut, you don't even have to put him on your active roster. And you can just slide him over to the practice squad if you're willing to let somebody else go. Yeah. All the time.
I was going to ask you, I was just curious because the book really depicts pretty much, I read about a lot of the different, and pretty much all the NFL teams were involved with this somehow. And your research was pretty tremendous going back to even the AFL versus NFL and taking players out of the NFL wanting to get the players, so on and so forth. So I'm curious as far as, and I think our audience is really interested, the research that you constructed, did you have any interaction with coaches or, you know, man, how did that all work with your research and how did that go about? Because it was tremendous just going back to those times and getting that kind of information from years ago. I think he's frozen.
Yeah, I think we lost him.
Kevin? Sorry for the audio, everybody.
Yeah, he definitely froze up. Let me see if I pop him out and pop him back in. Okay.
No, he froze.
All right, I think we lost him.
All right, we'll give him a second. Maybe he'll pop back in. All right. As he gets.
You know what? While he is trying to get back in, let's take a quick little break here and talk about a few things. DraftKings changed the fantasy game forever in 2012. Now, 10 years later, they're doing it again with Rainmakers Football, their first ever NFT fantasy game. A new way to enjoy daily fantasy football, a new shot to win millions in prizes, and the only NFT fantasy game licensed by the NFLPA. I tell you, today, Mike, I got some DraftKings NFT packs. So I'm kind of excited to try to build my Rainmakers roster myself. But, you know, buy, sell, bid, win player cards of the biggest names in the game through regular drops and auctions. Build your collection of football stars and enter free Rainmaker football contests all season long to compete for millions. Enjoy dropping prizes. Each week, craft your lineups of athletes from your NFT collection and rack up points for touchdowns, receptions, and more like you would in daily fantasy football. The next generation of fantasy sports is almost here. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app now and sign up with promo code TPPN. Click the Rainmakers tile and opt in so you can be ready for the next drop. Play free for millions in prizes all football season, and build the ultimate NFT fantasy franchise with Rainmakers Football. That's promo code TPPN only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And let's see if we can pop Kevin back in now. Kevin, right, better on your end?
Hi.
Okay. We got you back.
Better. Yeah.
That's what... Sometimes going live, because I said to myself, I don't think my question was that personal. There was dead silence. I'm like, did I say anything?
I said he hung up. He was done with you, Mike. So, Mike, I repeat your question real quick.
I was just going to repeat it. No, I mean, you know, Kevin, just reading your book, I was just incredible. Just depicting those stories going back, I was saying, you know, AFL and NFL and NFL trying to take the players, and just all these the different stories about the different teams. So all the research that you developed, I'm curious, you know, how much personal interactions did you have with any, you know, maybe coaches or management, or was it more through outside sources and hearing from different players? Like, how did that all work?
Yeah, it was. So a lot of it was from books. I went through about 60 books written by former coaches, or at least that were about former coaches, and sucked a lot of the material out of there. I did some interviews that were anonymous as well, and because it's a very sensitive topic. So, you know, trying to get coaches to open up about this stuff when it could potentially, you know, either get them in trouble with the league, give away tactics that they're using,
right?
Or taint the legacies of either, you know, their fellow coaches or their competitors. So, and nobody wants to be that guy. So, some of them I did not, had some anonymous interviews that helped, and then also, you know, the internet, tremendous resource nowadays, to be able to find a bunch of old articles that are still sitting out there on the web and be able to collect and gather those as well. But yeah, it was a lot of work. Going through the books was by far the most labor intensive piece there to go through and be able to find enough material on the subject. And as fascinating as it is, that was the toughest part, was how you gather enough information on a subject that everybody is rather hush hush about and nobody wants to really talk about.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's just like I said, it's a tremendous, interesting title. The book itself is fantastically interesting to football fans. It's something that we're always thinking about. And the one thing that I always think about is Spygate and Deflategate and Bill Belichick and going back to maybe even before he was with the Patriots and his time with the Browns and maybe even his time with the Giants, you know, how much of this, your research and everything, did you find out more about Bill Belichick in general?
A bit. I have a whole section of the book on all things Patriots. You know, while I cover the entire history of the NFL and I cover all the teams are involved in espionage, you know, and collecting information on their opponents in one shape or fashion. Okay. Having said that, I know there's a tremendous amount of interest in the Patriots and, you know, and I'm no exception. The interesting thing about the Patriots, I think that people will find about this book is how many techniques the Patriots are willing to use to collect on their opponents. So it's not just, you know, signals collection, which obviously they got in trouble for with Spygate, right? But it is, there were allegations of them going into opponents' locker rooms and stealing play sheets from out of there. And, you know, that's a huge deal because those play sheets tell you the first 10, 15 plays that another team has scripted. And so in some teams, they pretty much go in order of their play sheets of the plays that they're going to run. So potentially if you get a play sheet from a team like that, you can literally know just about the entire first quarter's worth of plays that team is going to execute, which is just a massive advantage. But, you know, the thing that goes in the book when it comes to the Patriots is headset tampering, which is another allegation that's been put on the Patriots. And I think I've got some really, really great stuff in there on that subject. And potentially, if they are doing it, how are they pulling it off? Because that's the big question. Everyone wants to, you know, those headsets use military level encryption. So how do you do it? How do you break it? Well, if it is being done in the NFL, I'm pretty sure I know how it's done. And I've got it there in the book. But to answer your question, you know, when it comes to Belichick and Ernie Adams, who is his right-hand man, who kind of runs everything for him on the collection scene, it definitely goes back to the Browns. And I've got some examples in my book where people have stated, you know, it does go back to the Browns and some of the collection activities that they have been using go back that far.
Yeah,
that's, you know, it's the one thing that's always on everyone's mind, especially the Rams Super Bowl, you know, the walkthrough that the Rams to this day feel the Patriots filmed it. They feel that they knew exactly what they were going to do in a lot of situations. They knew formations, they knew snap counts. The Marshall Faulk, you know, still will not say that it didn't happen, right? He's on record saying it's happened. He swears by it. He said it while he was on the NFL Network and all that. So, you know, definitely something that's interesting when it comes to the Patriots and all the different things that they're accused of through the years. So it's a very interesting topic. And I think as people read this book and dig more into it, they'll be very, I don't know if shocked, but very surprised at the details that you laid out about it.
Yeah. And in addition to that, I think it's the legacy too. It's their legacy. Like you read this book and you think of them as, you know, the championship years, but you read into this more, you're just, that really comes up for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and as you mentioned, Vin, I think that's that whole taping of the Rams practice, the alleged taping of the Rams practice, that was investigated by the NFL. And while it appears that they did not tape the practice, what did come out, NFL very much downplayed this fact, was that the Patriots had a staff member who sat through that Rams walkthrough practice and went back and debriefed the Patriots defensive coordinator on everything that he saw about how Marshall Faulk was going to be used for that game. And that is a practice that has gone on repeatedly throughout the course of Bill Belichick's history. Patriots is, is personnel left behind once they finish their practice while another team takes the field. So, it's just another one of those techniques that the Patriots use to try to gain that little extra advantage over their opponents.
Do you see, Mike, before you can ask, real quick on that, do you think his assistants don't translate well when they leave because they lose some of that level of inside intelligence that they had with the Patriots that maybe they don't get when they take head coaching jobs in other cities?
Sorry, was that a question to me, Vin?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, so I absolutely think that's the case. And, the Patriots do a much better job of assimilating their information than all the other teams. Not just, they do a better job collecting it, one, because they're willing to cross lines that other teams are not, but two, they use various methods to be able to verify or to build upon information that they've already collected. So, for instance, if they want to acquire the signals information of another team, they're going to use advanced scouts, send them to games, try to pick that information up. They're going to scour the available footage that's available from games and try to look at that. They're going to bring in players from other teams, right? And then debrief them. And then if they know something in advance, let's say from advanced scouting, they're going to ask that player from that other team, hey, does this, does this signal, maybe it's a hand signal or whatever it is that the quarterback's going to give in audible, does it still correspond to this right here? And that player goes, oh, yes, it does, or no, it changed a week ago and it's now this. And they do a fantastic job of that, but not collecting that information. It becomes, how do you use it given the limited amount of time that you have on the field to be able to call in plays? And the Patriots have a system down for how they do that, whether it's they go to a hurry up offense to be able to, to be able to, use what the defense is showing them or whatever it is, but they are, they're very savvy. And that's when Ernie Adams comes into play. And that's really one of his main roles on that team is how do you collect it and how do you use it? And he's one of the smartest guys in all of football, in all of the NFL, probably the top five minds in the NFL today that nobody really knows anything about. And he's brilliant. And you pair him up with Bill Belichick, and it's such an advantage.
Yeah. I just wanted to go off that. We actually have a question from one of our viewers. Wanted to ask you, do you believe Bill Belichick's punishment was too lenient? If so, what would you have recommended?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the question is, which case? So, they've been in trouble recently, right? For Spygate.
Yeah.
And then recording a Bengals practice. Which was the most recent incident. So, when it came to Spygate, I think the whole NFL felt that was too lenient. If you weren't a Pats fan, pretty much everybody felt, this was too lenient. When it came to Deflategate, the punishment was plain. It was orphaned for allegedly done. And I think the NFL as a whole felt more like, okay, well, that's better. And then the most recent incident with the Bengals, really, I would say probably, you know, 8/10 of the NFL fans probably aren't even aware that it ever took place. So here's my opinion on all of this, you know, with everything, not just the Patriots, but with spying in general in the NFL, when it comes to techniques that are illicit and clearly break NFL rules or bylaws. The NFL has a group called NFL Security, and their job is to pretty much keep everything hush hush and on the down low, because they don't want any scandals to break out. So when it, you know, and so everything they do is kind of viewed through this lens of let's keep everything quiet. And they tried to do this with Spygate and sweep it all under the rug, you know, as quickly as they could. They issued a punishment before a quote unquote investigation that was never a real investigation ever took place. And, you know, and it ended up with a whole bunch of problems for the NFL. Almost went to a congressional inquiry over the matter. So they did a much better job with the Deflategate. But the bottom line with all this stuff is the NFL is always wanting to solve everything as quickly and quietly as they possibly can. And it's not about as much issuing a punishment as it is making the problem go away, however that may be, quickly. Because an incident like Spygate costs the NFL billions of dollars, you know, and players can need billions of dollars lost. You don't want to see this stuff.
Yeah, it always comes down to the cash, right, Mike? We always yep. say always. That the NFL does a lot of stuff to just protect the money, and you know the way that they continue to run business is to make sure you don't totally interrupt that fan base and the amount of TV revenue and everything that comes along with that. You know, my question is, I'm a new head coach. I'm taking over Mike's Jets because they, you know, they need the help. And, you know, I hire you, Kevin, as my intelligence agent on my staff. What are some of the first things you would do, you know, in order for me to get some intel, you know, moving forward?
Yeah, first of all, I'm super stoked, Ben, because, you know, that's I like that idea. So bring me on when you become a head coach. yeah, so I think first and foremost, it is a matter of professionalizing how those collection activities are done. So I will give you an example. Collection through the media. What teams are looking at doing is when they're about to play an opponent, they're going to go through and assess what is out there on TV and in the radio and in newspapers that may be a hint about who's an injured player that may not be playing. You know, what's a new technique? What's a new formation they be running? Anything that's a key as to what's new, what's being developed, and what, you know, critical bit of information that we can glean from the media. Well, how do teams go about collecting that information? A lot of times they simply tap a low-level assistant or even an intern to go and try to find this information out on the internet somewhere. The problem with that is, okay, so let's say I get information and we're working for the Jets, right? And we're collecting on the Dolphins. And we've got information that Tyreek Hill, he's going to be injured. He's missed the game. Okay? But the question is, how do we know that that is good information? Okay. What do we know about that newspaper, about that reporter's relationship with the coach? How many times has that reporter passed good information in the past that's been reliable and proven true? That head coach, how often does that head coach for the Dolphins pass false information for the purpose of trying to deceive opponents. All of those types of things come to play. And if you don't have someone on your team that knows how to deal with all of those issues and to be prepared for it and to professionally go about collecting and assessing that type of information, you're just going to look at it and go, coaches go, you know what? Great. Trust us. So my question would be, well, why are you even bothering in the first place? Because you're not doing it in a professional manner. And those teams that are winning championships or winning Super Bowls, they know how to do that type of stuff and to do it well. And this is where teams that are year after year that are struggling, this is one of the main things that they struggle with, is doing these little tidbits well and professionally. Because let's face it, player-wise and talent-wise, with the draft and everything else, there is so much parity built into the league now. And with the salary cap, that you need these little extras that teams like the Patriots do so well. And that teams throughout the past that have won Super Bowls, like George Halas's Bears, Vince Lombardi's Packers, you know, Sid Gilman's Chargers, Mike Shanahan with the Broncos. These were all guys that were very professional in how they went about collecting information from other teams. And they're winning championships and get into those big games because of this.
Yeah, it's those attentions to detail that I always think about when it comes to the great football teams and the great coaches and being able to see things that other teams don't see and being able to pull information, you know, from places that people don't even think about. So, you know, I think it's a real interesting topic even as we move forward. And I think as people, you know, get that opportunity to read your book and seeing what's out there and what's been out there, and then other things is the future of the NFL and other things that people can think about in a more professional manner of conducting intelligence checks and things like that. So, Mike, you know, I'll turn it to you for some last minute thoughts and questions.
No, I just that's a really good point. You know, it really is. It separates the great teams versus the good teams versus the bad teams. And I think that, you know, my biggest thing that I got from the book is, you know, there could be simple spying that, you know, you get a slap on the wrist, but then there's stuff that goes too far, Kevin, like you said, when, you know, you go into someone's locker room and you steal their plays, right? So you have to, you have to really assess that. But no, I just want to tell our audience that the book is really fantastic. What I really appreciated was being a big NFL fan, not just a Jets fan, people, big NFL fan. I love the whole sport, is that it really depicts from the time frame going back to, you know, the beginning of the NFL and before we had all this technology, before we had, you know, even like TVs or cell phones or anything, how people would just go into stadiums and they would hire like these kids to go in and take notes and give it back to the teams. And just like now we evolved into, you know, as you said, the headsets on the, you know, and technology is going to continue to grow. And that's why you both were discussing our, you know, who's going to really assess this? Who's really going to monitor this? How are teams going to have certain advantages? Because you got to just really watch out for that. You need the right people in place. As you said, Kevin, you can't just have any old person like looking, because who knows who's telling the truth, who's not. You really have to get smart people out there who get the right information. But no, really, truly enjoyed it. Love all the different scenarios. There was one thing that I got to say before I go is it was about the Drew Brees situation. You know, after Hurricane Katrina, and his, you know, I guess his girlfriend or wife at the time, she had to, like, you know, turn on the sinks and just make sure everything was loud so people weren't listening through the walls. And I just found that to be hilarious. Just, you know, you'll hear tidbits like that just make it really interesting. So great job to you, Kevin. It was really awesome. Really enjoyed it very much.
Hey, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, listening devices is one of those interesting subjects where, you know, there are techniques that you're not really sure are they being used or not, like drones or listening devices. And, you know, a listening device has been known to be used in college football. That's been confirmed. But in the NFL, it's kind of a question mark, you know. And Peyton Manning, as recently as last year, you know, while he was doing a, announcing a game, was talking about how he was fearful of it in the Patriots. Whenever he would play the Patriots in New England, and how he would drag his wide receivers into the shower room and to be able to talk to them there, you know, I would assume turning on the water to try to mask any sound. And so, yeah, it's a fascinating subject, really interesting. But, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show, you know, how paranoid people are. But at the same time, you know, if your best minds in football are going to the Yanks, it gives you a pretty good indication that, you know, there's something behind that fear. And so, you know, I think coaches and players are wise to put in these countermeasures, even when they may seem, you know, completely paranoid to casual fans and others. There's a reason that they're willing to take these steps to protect their information, because, you know, as we've seen with Bill and so many other coaches throughout the history of the NFL, like I've written about in my book, you know, people are willing to go to those extremes. And the teams that are winning championships, you know, I've got examples after example in the book. You know, the teams that are spying well and collecting information on their opponents well are the teams that are winning championships. So, you know, that's what it comes down to.
Yep. There's only 32 of those jobs in the world, and there's 32 people that want to do everything they can to keep them, right? I mean, that's really the bottom line when it comes down to it. But, you know, there's, like Kevin said, a lot of great stories in his book. His book is Spies on the Sidelines, The High-Stakes World of NFL Espionage. I know you can get it on Amazon. Other places you can get it, Kevin.
Yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. You can go to my website. It's www.spiesonthesidelines.com. And I got all the information about me, about all your purchasing options. It's out in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. It'll be, and I've got also all my social media handles on the website as well for people that are interested in following me.
All right, great. We appreciate it. Thank you for spending this time with us. Again, people, Spies on the Sidelines, The High-Stakes World of NFL Espionage by Kevin Bryant. Kevin, again, thank you.
Mike, have a great night. All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.